I'm Pat Youngquist, and I guess I am here as a representative from CFNA, Conference Council on Finance and Administration, and it is a group that I chair. I have a real passion for stewardship, and so I'm really excited to be a part of my district stewardship team. And Phil has asked me to present this afternoon a little bit about just what our current practices of apportionments calculation are, you know, and really that's kind of what I'm going to go over today, just to make sure that everybody understands. If I could get a couple volunteers, I want to pass out a handout, well, two handouts, okay, resources that should be available to you. The first one we're going to go over is copied out of the conference journal, and we're going to briefly talk about the apportionment calculation, how each local church's apportionments are calculated. I'm hoping that this is something that all of you understand and know, but I don't like to assume that, and I get enough questions around the district, my own district at times, or places that maybe people don't always understand how apportionments are calculated. And so we're just going to go through that briefly. I'm only on for 15 minutes. Don't panic and think I'm up here for an hour to talk about this stuff. We're going to have small group discussion. I'm just going to be talking for a little bit. The basic calculation of apportionments has to do with something called Table 3, which I'm also handing out. And I think what I have discovered is maybe this is where there's maybe less familiarity with this Table 3. And does everybody have a Table 3 in their hand? It's this one that says church income on it. Okay. This is a form that's put out by the General Church, required by each church is required to complete. It might look a little different to you. This is the new one for the new quadrennium. Okay, it isn't quite what it looked like last year, but it is the same general information. So after the end of the year, beginning in January, when each church is able to complete this form, they're to do so, and apportionments are calculated. The line that is looked at is on this form, line 67. It's about a little more than halfway down, okay? Those are the items that are included in the apportionment calculation. One thing I would like to maybe bring up, as you all are district stewardship teams and persons who are resourcing local churches, a lot of churches don't understand the completion of this form and often will pay more in their apportionments maybe than they need to. I just left, I was in a church in the Southeast District, and I went through the completion of this form and found that our financial secretary was using the pass-through income in what she was reporting to the conference. And so I reduced our local church's apportionments by $4,000. Now, of course, I hope everybody understands when mine went down, yours went up, okay? But sometimes, you know, but we want it to be fair. I mean, we want everyone to do the report the correct way, and then it's all going to be equitable and fair. So anyway, I think a good understanding, I think the explanations on this form are quite thorough. I think there are a lot of times there's questions. I didn't have the opportunity last night when I was looking through the website, and I could do that. I Googled GCFA Table 3, and I got this in about 2 seconds, I mean, off of the web. So that's how fast. I think GCFA had a cover letter on this. There might be more detail on this, but it's pretty detailed. So I would think everyone needs to understand this is what, and just through line 67 is what's used to calculate apportionments. Okay? Any questions on that? Yes, Sue?
Yeah, for my own knowledge, can you explain how a church defines what pass-through money is? Can you give some examples of what? Because we had quite a discussion of how the church was about whether we claim something as income and someone said, no, that's pass-through. We got into a bit of trouble over that one, so I want to make sure.
Yeah, and that basically, if you look at 68D, which is not included in apportionment calculation, it says special Sundays, advanced specials, world service, and then enter here receipts for benevolent causes, including special Sunday offerings, general advanced and world service gift conference advanced specials, and other forms of designated donations given by individuals and forwarded by the local church. So the way I look at that is when the church is a clearinghouse, you know, when the church is getting the money and sending it out, it's a pass-through. That is not, that goes on 68D. Okay? So just, any other questions on that? So I just want everyone to have this in their hand and be familiar with it and be able to help local churches. Julie?
Did you mention anything about 66? Does that have anything to do with the apportionment formula?
No.
Yeah,
because that's just, because it's line 67A, well, I guess it's really line 67 because it's A through G. I mean, that's just dollars. So those are the dollars that are used by the conference to calculate apportionments. Okay, then we're going to go to, this is out of this other sheet I gave you with all this writing. I'm going to try to simplify this for you. We're going to just go through it real quick. This is out of the conference journal, page 352. Where, if you want to look at it later, this comes out of Chuck Smith's report to annual conference last year. He has this published as an example. We take 4 years, okay, from each local church of that line, which would be 67 that I talked about. So in this church from anywhere, Iowa, those 4 years total to 400,000 divided by 200,000 divided by four, so the average is 50. Okay, then we add up all of the line 67s from all the churches, okay, and we, for each year, you see the 4 years, we have 292,600,000 divided by four is 73,150, okay? Then the annual conference budget, the apportioned budget in round numbers we said was 15 million, okay? We divided that by the average, the 73,150, and we got a percent. And in our example, it's 20.5%. Okay, now we're going to go back to Church from Anywhere, Iowa. Their 50,000 times 20.5 equals 10,250. That's now. There are a, and then the rest of this sheet, which you can peruse, but basically just then tells how it gets broken down into the different categories, also based on percentages. Now, the only thing, and actually written to our into our formula right now, is that this is about to go away, but is a part of our formula. But what's been a little confusing is this issue about if some church's apportionment goes up 10% or down 10%. Okay. And basically what happens here in the computer mind that calculates all this is based on this, all the apportionments get calculated. Okay, then the computer goes through and says, who is now more than 10% over? Those dollars have to get fed back in and spread out over everybody else. Well, then that's going to kick some more churches over 10%. See, and then also the ones that are under 10% get. It all has to be worked out. So every year when you get your apportionment sheet, it'll say you have a portion of that 10% of other churches. Does, am I making any sense? It's kind of hard to explain, but that's what it means. It all has to get divvied up so nobody goes down less than 10 or up more than 10. But what was approved at annual conference when we approved this particular formula was that that was only going to be in place, I think, for 4 years, and that's up. So know that someone's apportionments may go up or down more than 10% next year. Okay, but we'll be communicating more on that so everybody is aware.
Next year meaning 2010 or 2011?
2011, I'm sorry. And that's so confusing. And see if, you know, it's almost scary. I'm getting used to how far ahead we work. That next year to me is actually 2011, which is really 2 years from now. But we have to, because of, I think you all understand, because we have to approve all these things at annual conference in June, we're really kind of working quite a bit ahead of ourselves. And I know from me working, that I've worked in budgets a lot in my career, it seems way ahead to me to be approving a budget 6 months ahead of time, but that's the way we do it. Okay, let's see. My time's just about up, so I'll go. That was a quick 15 minutes. So let me just go briefly. I want to tell you about a couple resources on the website just to make sure that you're familiar with them. Phil's going to go over them with me. One, I think, is district stewardship teams, something that's available there. If you're going to go in and work with the church, there's a 10-year history of their apportionment payments. So when you're going into that church, you can go back and see how they've been doing, and he'll just pick a church there. And we didn't pick them for any reason.
It's random.
It was random. And you'll get this report. There it is. And it tells the first column, the apportionment amount, what was paid, and what was outstanding. So you can, going in, know the history. I think we all know to. It's always important to learn the history of any organization we're trying to help. So... that's one resource that's available, and there are a lot of different types of resources available on the web. Steve?
What was the path to get to the...
Oh, okay. Okay, I went to Finance and Administration, which is up at the top. You see it, Phil, that little tab? I mean, he wanted to know how to get there.
Oh, I see.
When you
so
log
go,
on the...
I'm
yeah,
to the home.
Go to the home page. Okay.
On the home page.
Now he's on the home page. There's Finance and Administration right in the middle. And then the very first there is the 10-year apportionment history. And then you just find the church, drop-down menu, and you got it.
Is there any way to go back further
than 10 years? Actually, our staff person, Jeremy Jolly, may have that. He would be a good resource, otherwise journals. I don't know what they have on computer, but Jeremy would know. Jeremy's basically is our... And if you do have questions about apportionment formula calculation, actually I have some handouts for later on forgiveness if you want to know the policy. Jeremy Jolly is the person in the conference office who answers those questions, and he's... I have not had anything but good feedback. He's quite helpful, so Jeremy will help you. Okay, so we're on our Finance and Administration page. I think, Phil... The other one I want to show them is that Excel spreadsheet.
Apportionment resources, that's called, sort of in the middle of that.
This I found at my own church who was having trouble paying apportionments. Click on this, it says, my eyes are bad, what does that say, Phil? 2009 apportionment breakdown, okay. What you can do for any church is call up this Excel spreadsheet, and based on our total conference budget, let's say a church has, their apportionments are $25,000. So up in the yellow, you type in 25, hit enter, and it distributes the $25,000. And so I went to my church, and they actually could get more connected with, this much of my money goes to Africa University, or, you know, I mean, it's a way, a talking point. So line by line, you can help them see the dollars and then see where those funds are going. So I found that to be helpful in my own local church, and you might be able to. And then I saw that Jeremy already has the 2010 Excel spreadsheet up there, so you can do the same thing for 2010. Okay, Phil, is that what you wanted me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ed?
Yes, Pat, as a leader in CFNA, how do you describe the purpose of the apportionment formula?
Well, no one's ever asked me the purpose of the formula. You mean maybe the objective, or why do we have a formula?
Yeah.
I think that I guess I would say that we feel that it is the most equitable way that and simplest way that we can apportion our conference budget, you know, to each local church. As you know, we used to do it on expenses not too long ago. When I came to this conference, we were just coming off of that, I think. And actually, in meeting, I was at a GCFA. They had us CFNA leaders all get together, and we were kind of talking about things in general and different apportionment formulas. And the general consensus was that when you have the expense formula and then all of these different caveats to it, and it gets confusing, it disconnects people even more. So to have it based on income, and one of the benefits I see of having it based on income is if a church is struggling and their income goes down, then that's going to affect their apportionment formula. When you're doing it on expenses and you have a small church that's struggling but they're carrying the load and expense of a big building and you're doing it on expenses, their apportionments stay the same even though their income's going down. So based on a conception of a tithe, although we don't just do 10%, it does become a percentage of income, and actually, if you would want to know, it's about 18% of a church's income is apportionments. So it's pretty close to that for most. That's the average. Does that?
Sometimes I've talked with churches about the apportionment formula as a way of comparing the relative strength of congregations with the whole.
And it is proportion giving. I mean,
for a while we thought strength was named in members, but that didn't work to expenses. But that's got all kinds of glitches. Now income, we're thinking maybe a reasonable, fair, equitable, and accurate way of comparing strength with strength.
Right.
So if your apportionments are going up, it's because you're strong.
Right. Yeah, I had somebody inquire of me, and I said, well, is your income going up? Well, yeah. Well, great. You know, be happy. Celebrate. I really believe if I could change it, I'd call it connectional giving. And I love to emphasize to congregations the opportunity that they have to give. And if we can help people see this is an opportunity to give and not something we have to pay. I mean, that's what we hope to do, is turn around that mindset of it being sounding like a negative. You know, can you imagine if some church said, gosh, we get to pay our apportionments? I mean, you know, with excitement. So that's through communication and all the different ways that we can. And I'm real excited about the district stewardship teams, because I think it is kind of a grassroots effort that has to be made to connect with the local congregations to get them to understand this is giving and it's not a tax and it's not this and it's not that. Phil, one other thing I wanted to bring up, I know now I'm over my time. I was revisiting something in the journal, and I did want to bring this up to us today to leave in front of us, because if this needs to be changed, I would just need to formally change it. But in fact, as district stewardship teams, our job description was voted on at annual conference, and we were asked to do some things. I mean, I think actually it might have been you, Ed, that made the comment, like, should we be apportionment police or not? It actually does say we are supposed to be apportionment. I mean, I just want to read you this one part. It says, I'm on the wrong page. I think I dog-eared it. Yeah, it's on page 342 of the journal. And I'm not going to read you the whole paragraph, but it says, additionally, this committee will work in consultation with the district superintendent to assist churches in arrears in their connectional giving to determine if any special assistance is needed in any of these areas, and in the areas where all the things that we've talked about, you know. So this is what the conference voted on. That's the point I'm making. And so we can go back and say, and I think it'd be great if we did go back and report on district stewardship teams as a celebration of what we've done since we were first charged with this. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. And if this is a ministry plan I submit as chair of CFNA, so I'll be happy to revise that and revisit that. So thank you.
Well, Pat's last comment is what we'd like to now pursue a bit together. The flip side of the page we were looking at this morning says apportionment, support, and accountability. And so that's going to be our topic for the next small group discussion. What we'd like to invite you to do is to take a look at just section one for right now, the local church support, and just review that as in small groups to see if it makes sense, to see if there are some aspects of the connection that are missing, the people that we'd like to invite into relationship and responsibility in responding to local church support. We'll give you about 20 minutes to discuss that, come back as a large group and see what suggestions you have.
Let me just share a quick story and then I'll be done. George Kibler was a retired postal worker for the U.S. Postal Service and a longtime finance chair of the Mount Pleasant United Methodist Church in the East Ohio Conference. And I was a relatively newly appointed pastor and was lamenting about how much I wish that we were more generous in our giving and stewardship. And George listened for a while, and then he finally said, Pastor, you are a preacher. I said, that would be correct. Most days I like to think of myself as a preacher. He said, preachers tell stories. And he said, you know, when we hear a story that makes real the gospel and we are asked to give, we give. He said, we may not be tapping our resources because we really haven't told the story well enough and we haven't been asked to give. And after that lesson from that wise layman of Mount Pleasant United Methodist Church, for the next 20 plus years, I was never hesitant about asking people to be generous and to give to the mission of the church. The Iowa Annual Conference has a lot of good news. We have so much good news that it's literally impossible for one person to capture that. In fact, we are fortunate to have an excellent communications department in the Iowa Annual Conference that recently received 7 or 8 awards with United Methodist Communications, and we ought to give Art a round of applause if nothing else for the 8 awards they received. I know it's Kevin and Darcy had a lot to do with that as well. And several of those awards were related to videos around flood recovery. So it's good to know that we have the capacity to communicate to laity and clergy and to those who would be part of the United Methodist movement in the Iowa Annual Conference. Our UMW typically lead the connection, one, two, or three, in mission giving. We were the highest contributor to UMCOR this past fiscal year. And Iowa Annual Conference typically leads the connection or is at the top tier of those who give to advance specials. But unfortunately, we often have also been the lowest or near the lowest in per capita giving by percentage of income, particularly in the North Central jurisdiction. So there is opportunity for us to grow both in financial stewardship, but I think the good news is that we've got far more stories to tell than we are literally telling. Bishop Trimble, can you give us an example? Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Yesterday, I spent 3/4 of my day in Dubuque. Part of that hanging out with Dave Crow, but part of that was attending Hillcrest Family Services board meeting, having a tour of Hillcrest Family Services, meeting folks who work with troubled youth, and then going to St. Luke's United Methodist Church and the Global Goods store that's going to be having an official opening, I believe, on November the 9th. This Global Goods store with goods from all around the world that support fair trade. And just 2 days before that, I was in Cedar Rapids, again hanging out with David Crow and others around good news about the block-by-block ministry that's going on in rebuilding after the floods. Now, in 1 week, I just gave you a sample of 2 days out of 1 week. Tom is working with our camp directors and camping ministry. All of you are in various places where literally every day ministry is taking place. So I stopped by this afternoon to say this is some of the... I've been here long enough to look in the window and to tell what kind of crowd is in here. So I looked in earlier, and I could tell this is an impressive crowd. I know a lot of you, not all of you, but I know many of you. I said, this is a pretty impressive representation field of leadership in the Iowa. And can I get at least two people to say amen? Okay. I just want to make sure I'm on target. You're just prolonging it by not saying it. I looked in and I could tell this was an impressive crowd of leadership in the Iowa Annual Conference. And I said, I wanted to come in. I told Bob, find an appropriate time. Phil had invited me some time ago. I'm actually in the process of leaving for Council of Bishops. I wanted to come in and say that as much as you do, and everybody in here is busy, the work that's going to come forth out of this group is some of the most important work that will take place, I believe, in the next 12 to 24 months in the life of the annual conference for such a time as this. And I wanted to just come in and to tell you that this is important work. This is important learning for all of us as we begin to tell the stories of the gospel and as we are able to invest in the kinds of ministries that result in stewardship, lifestyle stewardship that is based on generosity. A friend of mine was sharing with me some lamenting about a congregation that was somewhat depressed because the market had taken so much of their endowment funds. With the downturn of the market, some of that's coming back. And the pastor really was lamenting because the people were really upset about the fact that the church had lost quite a bit of money. And made the comment that whenever, as United Methodists, we are praying more for the stock market than we are for our mission, then we have a spiritual problem. When we are praying more for the recovery of the stock market than we are for passion for making disciples, we don't have a financial challenge. We don't have a stewardship obstacle. We have a spiritual problem. And so I would suggest that the work that you're going to do, we are going to do as a result of this time together. This is time well spent. This is investment in the kind of spiritual growth that will have a lasting effect and fruit that will come forth for many years to come. I count it a privilege to be able to look in a room like this and see such an august body. But this is October, isn't it? That was a joke. You'll get it later on. And I just wanted to stop in and tell you to be encouraged and say we've got phenomenal leadership in the Iowa Annual Conference and ministry that's taking place 24/7 all over the state. So we need not apologize for being in ministry at such a time as this.
I'm Dennis Tevis, Conference Superintendent in the North Central District. Bishop Trimble told us as cabinet that he holds us responsible for apportionments. And I was pretty well convinced of that one day when he turned my direction and asked me why two of the churches in my district had such a low percentage paid so far this year. I asked him a couple of weeks ago, we had a chance to talk, to clarify what he meant by holding us responsible. And I was very relieved to hear him say that it wasn't dollar for dollar that we had to make up for the apportionments that have not come in, but still there is that sense of responsibility. The bottom line is that the church, the conference, the general church, those things beyond local church depend on apportionments. And if we think that the work that they do is important, then apportionments are important. He also shared that he himself is being held responsible when he goes to the council on bishops. There's also a conversation about how the conferences, his conference, is doing in terms of apportionments. So it seems to me the responsibility for apportionments goes up and down the line from the general conference to the bishop here in Iowa to district superintendents to pastors and to churches. When I have pastoral interviews, when all district superintendents have pastoral interviews, as far as I can tell, the conversation includes apportionments. How that church, that pastor serving or churches is doing on apportionments. More than one district superintendent that I talked to said that when a church has paid less than 100% of apportionments the year before, they ask that pastor to call in the district stewardship committee or team and work with them in the expectation that they will show some improvement in the following year. And so that's one way that district superintendents can hold pastors responsible for apportionments. I would like to take just a minute to pause and ask you this question. What should pastors be held responsible for in terms of apportionment giving? When I have charge conferences, when district superintendents have charge conferences, at least speaking for myself and I think for others as well, always ask how the church is doing financially. And when elders are doing them for me, that's part of the agenda too. And then what about apportionments? Those are often very related questions. But in a sense, then, I have a chance to talk to the church, probably the largest group of church leaders that you're going to assemble, which would be the charge conference or the church conference, and to help educate in a number of ways. I'm still amazed at the number of churches that do not have stewardship campaigns and are unwilling, you know, to be convinced that by doing so, they could increase the resources they have and therefore the ministry that they're able to do. If we had more time, we'd talk about, you know, why that's the case. But I think in the interest of time, we'll move along. When I haven't been able to convince churches to conduct stewardship campaigns, I have talked to them about doing something in terms of stewardship, not connected with the church budget, but stewardship at different times of the year, because it seems to me that if we can raise up generous givers and giving in terms of all aspects of stewardship, you know, we're a long ways down the road toward a solution to the problem. In newsletter columns, I frequently thank congregations for their positive response, their willingness to give, even in difficult times. We do recognize churches that have paid 100% apportionments or those that have increased from year to year. We try to do that. That's in the area of thank, which is good stewardship procedure. I do want to share one thing that the ministry cabinet, I think, has already seen, but I found it interesting, this chart. This was some research conducted in West Ohio several years ago. It was done by looking at the payment history 3 years prior to a pastoral change, during the pastor's tenure at a church, and then the 3 years following the pastor's leaving. Let's just say here that the pastor's record before coming was that his church has paid 100% in those 3 years before coming. And the church has also been paying 100% of apportionments. 100% of the time, that church will continue to pay 100% apportionments. A second instance, pastor with a history of paying less than 100% apportionments is appointed to a church that has a history of paying in full. And in this research, the church stopped paying at 100% within the first year of that appointment. If the pastor was appointed elsewhere within 3 years, the church returned to 100% apportionment giving within the following year. If a pastor stayed more than 5 years with the church paying less than 100%, it seldom returned to 100%. A third case, if a pastor has a history of his or her church's paying 100%, was appointed to a church that had a history of paying less than 100%, that church usually moved to payment, full payment, within 2 years. And the combination of a church and pastor of both having a history of paying less than 100% apportionments, that church usually decreased, and it was less than the highest point that either had paid in the preceding years, and in fact often went to zero. Now, that's just a little bit of research from West Ohio. I'm not prepared really to extrapolate from it, but it's really quite striking, I think, and amazing. Anne?
I think the chart's just a little off there, Dennis. Is there a thing
now? Okay. All right. Thanks.
I want to be clear of it.
All right. Yeah, which is to say that the pastor is an important part of stewardship. That's what that says. How do you change, the culture of a church to go from, less to more in terms of generous to less than generous? And then how do you change individuals' understanding of what stewardship means? Partly responsibility of the pastor, partly, not entirely, but partly. For me, stewardship is a part of discipleship, and that in order to be a part of God's work, which is very important to me, I need to give. And I need to give not just my financial resources, but all of who I am, and proportion to what God has given to me and blessed me with.